Guys, thanks for joining me. This is Rose420 as always, and I am here to do part two of the OJ case. So we're going to focus now on his arrest, part of the trial probably, and get into all of that. So go grab your bud, go grab your wine, and let's dive into some true crime. Hey guys, welcome back. As always, I am Rose420, and we are here to do part two of the OJ case, which will include his arrest, the Bronco chase, the famous Bronco chase that made that ugly-ass car famous, more famous than it ever should have been. It was ugly, and it amazed me that the chase went on so long. It became very iconic. And there's also a suicide note involved. And I think that's all we'll have time to get into because, yeah, I think that will take about 45 minutes. And I can only talk so long and listen to myself. So, let's get into the strain of the day. So, I am smoking my vape pen today. So, that means I have a dab cartridge. What is in it is called cheese. Yes, cheese. And me and my bestie talked about it, and anything named after cheese that isn't actually cheese is pretty discouraging sounding. It doesn't sound like it's going to be delicious. I've actually been enjoying it. I give it a, I don't know, it's not, it doesn't even have leaves, but I give it a 4 out of 5 leaves because, I mean, it's concentrate, so it's good. As always, I have my glass of Pinot Grigio with me. So go get whatever you want to drink. Soda, cocktail, wine. If you're feeling fancy, spancy, go grab that. Go grab your bong, your bowl, and your weed. And let's dive back into this case about OJ. So after the LAPD learned that it was Nicole Brown Simpson that was the female victim, the commander had officers go to notify OJ of her death. They wanted to pick him up and bring him to the police station because the couple's children were asleep in Brown's condominium at the time of the murders. So the detectives buzz at the intercom at the OJ Simpson estate, and they're there for over 30 minutes. They don't receive any response. But they do notice that OJ's car is there. So they think it's weird he's not answering because it looks like he's home. And it was parked awkwardly, like somebody rushed to park it and jumped out of it. So it had, there was blood on the door of the car, right? So they see this blood and the car is parked all erratically. So Juice the douche was starting to look real guilty in their eyes. They thought that even somebody might still be hurt inside. So basically what happens is one of them scales the wall to unlock the gate so all the detectives can enter. They say they entered without a search warrant because they feared for somebody's life inside. Now, if I see blood, I think that should automatically make it okay they didn't have a search warrant. Like, you want to act as quickly as possible. You don't know what happened. Even if he wasn't involved, you don't know, he could be injured or something. He wasn't because he's a douchebag, but I'm just saying, it's possible. So, I don't know that they really should have had to argue that point after blood was spotted. So they interview his friend, Kaylin, and he told the detectives that the car was OJ's, and he heard thumps, like bumps on his wall. So remember, he's out in the guest house. So he's on the property, but not in the actual Simpson estate. So he hears thumps, like thump, thump, thump on his wall. So they go to inspect the guest house because he heard the thumps. OJ's car is parked weird. There's blood. And they find a blood-stained right-hand glove. This glove, no glove, not even the hamburger helper glove, has ever been as iconic as this freaking glove. If you were a kid in the 90s, like I was, an adult, whatever, you remember this glove. This glove becomes the biggest part of this case, and not in a good way, like you might think. Like you might think, oh, they found the glove. Just wait. Just wait. Johnny Cochran, man, that guy must have made a deal with the devil with how persuasive that dude was. Johnny Cochran killed it in the courtroom. He was one of those people that was born to be a lawyer. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So it's the mate of the left-hand glove that they found next to Ron Goldman's body, if you remember that. It was brought up in the first part of this. So they have both gloves. They're both bloody. It looks like they were used to hide fingerprints. And this gave probable cause for the officers to get an arrest warrant for OJ Simpson. So they call OJ in Chicago to tell him about Nicole's murder. So OJ is still in Chicago, that's why he wasn't home. But they still have an arrest warrant because of what they found at the home. So they say OJ sounded very upset, but he didn't seem concerned about the circumstances in which Nicole died, which her head was almost decapitated off of her body, if you will remember. So to not be concerned about that seems weird, right? I mean, like, you're gonna be concerned, even if you guys aren't together. This woman is the mother of your children. You're gonna be concerned that her and her friend died in a vicious, vicious way. Like, those circumstances, it's not like she got mugged and was murdered. Not that that's excusable at all. It's not. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, she almost got decapitated, and there seems to be no motive. So, not concerned with the circumstances. And OJ then asks, this is the only question he asks. So his wife is almost decapitated, and the only question he asks is if the children had seen the body of Nicole. But he didn't ask if the children were okay or whether they had been harmed. So that says he either knows the children are okay or just doesn't care. Either way, juice the douche, getting reinforced here. But your sketch alarm should be going off. Like, sketch ball, sketch ball, sketch ball. Everything he is saying does not add up, and it never will. So, I brought up that OJ broke a glass, right, in the last episode. So they ask him about the cut on his hand. He first claims that it was when he learned of Nicole's death. He accidentally cut it. And then OJ gets informed that there is blood that they found in his car already. And then he says he cut his finger the night of the murders, but he couldn't remember how. If you have that large of a cut on your hand, as somebody who's put a knife through their finger, and I mean entrance wound, exit wound, all that gross stuff, had to get surgery on it because I severed nerves. Yeah, it was a big to-do. You're going to remember exactly when and where you cut your finger. So, sketchy, he does not remember where his finger was cut.
He gave some of his own blood for comparison, but if he's saying, hey, this is from my cut, and it turns out to be his blood, no big deal, right? So he gives his blood for comparison. And evidence was collected, so Simpson hires a lawyer, which he obviously realizes that he looks sketchy as fuck because he is sketchy as fuck. So this lawyer is Robert Shapiro. And this team that he assembles for OJ will be known as the Dream Team. Once they all come together, the media will dub them the Dream Team, and that's what they get called. So Robert said that Simpson was increasingly distraught and was seeking treatment for depression. I don't think so. Simpson didn't even seem distraught when Nicole died or concerned that she was almost decapitated or with the safety of his kids. So doubtful. But whatever, Robert Shapiro, you gotta defend your client to the best of your ability. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but let's say Shapiro does not end up being OJ's favorite person. So the following days after Robert Shapiro said this, the results came back from the DNA test and they matched OJ Simpson's. But the DA, aka the district attorney, if you did not know that, which I'm sure you all do, but I don't have all American listeners, so district attorney did not file charges until every result came back. So the filing of the charges was delayed. So, with that being said, OJ spent the night of June 16th and 17th at his friend's house. Can we guess who that friend is? Robert Kardashian. This is why people think Khloe is OJ's, because the Kardashians were really good friends with the family. So he ends up staying at Robert Kardashian's house. Robert Kardashian will also become a part of the Dream Team, but he wasn't really that kind of lawyer. It was more he was friends with OJ and trying to help. But so this is how the Kardashians know. If you've ever watched the show, Chris was actually really good friends with Nicole Brown Simpson. And yeah. So, but people always say that OJ is Khloe's father. So there's an interesting fact for you if you want to look into that. I don't know. The only one that knows the answers to that is Chris. So, June 17th, detectives recommend that OJ gets charged with both counts of first degree murder because of Nicole and Ron, obviously. And so they're waiting for the final DNA tests to come back. The LAPD notifies Robert Shapiro, which you'll remember, OJ hired him as a part of his Dream Team defense at 8:30 and told him that OJ, Juice the Douche, would have to turn himself in that day. Let's just say this doesn't go, foreshadowing, this doesn't go as smoothly as one might think. It's like a bucking bronco. Hint, 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 hint. So, at 9:30, Robert Shapiro then goes to Robert Kardashian's house. Good old Bobby Kardash, as I like to call him, like I knew him. Hey, I've admitted many times I've watched all the episodes of Keeping Up, so no hate to the Kardashians. Robbie Kardash. So Shapiro goes to his house to tell OJ he needs to turn himself in by 11 a.m. So this is an hour after the charges were filed. So Shapiro specifically tells him 11 a.m. sharp. Nothing else. He has to turn himself in. So OJ says, yeah, I wanted to turn myself in. So the police agree to it because he seems to be compliant. So he's allowed to turn himself in because they think someone with all the ties and fame, like OJ would not try and flee because people would notice it. We will find out soon that that is not true. Foreshadowing or me just giving away the story, I don't know. So the police delay his surrender until noon so he can be seen by a mental health specialist. They thought he was suicidal and depressed. He updated his will, called his mom and his children, and wrote three sealed letters, one to his children, one to his mother, and one to the public. Because when committing suicide, who doesn't need a note to the public? Like, OJ, worry about your damn self, boy. What are you doing? What are you doing? So, 1,000 reporters wait outside for OJ to take the perp walk at the LAPD police station. But he doesn't arrive. Is anybody shocked by this? This is the least shocking thing in this whole case. So they notify Robert Shapiro that they were going to Bobby Kardashian's house and that they were going to arrest him. He no longer had the right to turn himself in. So Kardashian and Shapiro told Simpson all of this, that he lost his right, he would be arrested. The police were going to arrive an hour later. But when the police arrived, O.J. Simpson and his friend Al Cowlings had disappeared. They found the letters. Remember, one was for his children, one was for his mother, and one was to the public. At 1:50 p.m., the LAPD's chief spokesman declared O.J. Simpson a fugitive. The police issued an all-points bulletin for him and an arrest warrant for Cowlings. Okay, so let's get into the suicide notes in a little more depth. I'm not saying he wasn't depressed, but I think he was sad he was caught, not sad or depressed that Nicole Brown Simpson died, not in the least. He had threatened her life so many times and beat her. I think he was one of those people that sorry he got caught. So, at 5 p.m., Robert Kardashian and another defense lawyer read the letter to the public. Simpson sends out greetings to 24 friends, and he also writes, "First, everyone understand I have nothing to do with Nicole's murder." He goes on to describe in detail their fights and their decision to not reconcile, and he asks that the media, as a last wish, not bother his children. He wrote to his girlfriend, which he was just divorcing Nicole and still harassing her, "Paula, I'm sorry we're not going to have our chance. As I leave you, you'll be in my thoughts." He also included sentences like, "I can't go on," and an apology to Ron Goldman's family. Finally, the letter concluded, "Don't feel sorry for me. I've had a great life, great friends. Please think of the real OJ and not this lost person." So people clearly interpret this as a suicide note. OJ's mother collapsed after hearing it, and then they all start searching for Simpson. This is going to lead to the Bronco chase, the longest, slowest chase ever. So Robert Kardashian has a press conference, and Robert Shapiro said that OJ's psychiatrist agreed this was a suicide note. But on TV, Robert Shapiro asks OJ to surrender. Okay, so let's get into the Bronco chase now. Fucking Bronco! I'm sorry, I'm weird. So helicopters are clearly flying all over LA, and they're looking for a white Ford Bronco that OJ's friend Cowlings owned. At 5:50, no, OJ owned it. Cowlings was driving. I'm sorry. It doesn't really matter, but I just want to correct that. At 5:51, OJ calls 911. They trace it, obviously, because he's a fugitive and wrote a public suicide note. So there you go. So they trace it, and he's on the Santa Ana Freeway. At 6:20, a motorist in Orange County notified California Highway Patrol that he believed he saw Simpson riding in a Bronco on the I-5 freeway going north. The police then tracked calls placed by Simpson on his cell phone. Now, please remember, this was the infancy of cell phones. There were no smartphones. He had one of those huge-ass mofo and brick phones that looked, they had to weigh like 20 pounds. It probably came with a bag with it, too. Because all my younger listeners, that was a thing when cell phones first came out. You had to carry a bag with them so it could work. Now you have all the information in the palm of your hand. You don't know the struggle. And you could tell teachers to F off when they say you won't have a calculator with you always. Because guess what? You will. And when they said that to me, I couldn't say that. But you will. And if you're not great at math, that's fine. Because you'll always have a calculator. All right. Back on to the subject. So they're tracing his calls. At 6:45... police see the Bronco, and it's on Interstate 405, sorry. And the female officer catches up to it. Cowlings yells out to the officer that OJ is in the back, and he is pointing a gun at his own head, therefore clearly threatening to kill himself. So the officer backs off because she doesn't want him to kill himself, but continues to follow them. So, at 35 miles per hour, there are up to 20 police cars following the chase. So, they track O.J. Simpson to El Toro on the news. So, yeah. Cowling, and this is important because, so like, they track him on the news, and this is important because they're listening to the radio. So they know they're listening to KNX AM. And the sports announcer, Pete Abergast, called OJ Simpson's former USC football coach, and OJ was very close with his coach in college. That wasn't brought up, but he was. And connected him to OJ. Both men just cried and cried. And OJ finally says, okay, coach, I won't do anything stupid. I promise. He said this off the air. But there's no doubt that because of McKay, he didn't end up killing himself. Otherwise, he was probably going to kill himself in the backseat of the Bronco. Do I think that would have been the worst thing in the world? I think that the families deserve to see the justice and get the closure they needed, although I don't think you get closure from these things ever really, but yeah. So Simpson turns himself in instead of committing suicide, and Juice the Douche ends up at the police station. So officials discuss how to make him surrender peacefully, though. So he's going to turn himself in. He shows up at the police station. How does he surrender peacefully? So Lang, a journalist who had interviewed Simpson about the murders on June 13th, realized that OJ had called his cell phone repeatedly. Oh, no, he realized he had OJ's cell phone and called him repeatedly. Sorry. So they hook a tape recorder up to his phone to try and capture Lang and OJ speaking. So Lang tells him to throw the gun out the window for the sake of his mother and children. OJ says, I'm really sorry that I didn't turn myself in earlier today. And he was the only one that deserved to get hurt. And he just wanted to go with Nicole. And he just wanted to get to the house, and he needed the gun for himself. And you could hear Al pleading with him to surrender and end all of this peacefully. And yeah, so this became huge. Everybody in the United States stopped what they were doing and watched OJ in this chase. Now, I know I've painted OJ as a terrible person, but and he is. But this was shocking for many people. He was an American hero. He was a great football player. He was in movies that we thought he was funny in. You know, he was one of the people America loved. So they could not believe that their hero was a part of this chase. So all the LA streets empty. And people weren't even drinking at the bars because they were just watching TV. Every single television had the chase on. They stopped regular programming so we could watch this, and it was watched by 95 million viewers nationwide. Now, to compare how big that is, only 90 million watched the Super Bowl that year. So 5 million more people turned in to see OJ chased in his Bronco, maybe kill himself or maybe turn himself in. We're not sure yet. It was intense, and everybody was into it. So there were even NBA finals on. In the corner of the finals, they would still be covering the chase because that's what people wanted to know about, was what was going on with the chase. It was also broadcast internationally. So France, China, all of that. So people also packed the overpasses so they could watch him possibly drive by in his white Bronco, which seems insane, but they were urging him to flee. People were shouting stuff like, "Go, OJ, go." It was a famous slogan from a commercial at the time, but like I said, he was an American hero. People didn't want to believe this about OJ. They wanted to believe that he was still an American hero. OJ reportedly demanded that he be allowed to speak to his mom before he surrendered. And the chase ends at 8 p.m. at his Brentwood estate. If you remember, he asked to just please go home when talking to people. His son, Jason, ran out of the house gesturing wildly, and 27 SWAT officers waited for him. So he was about to get his ass beat. So he stays in the Bronco for 45 minutes, and then he exits at 8:50 with a framed picture of his family. He went inside the house for about an hour, and he spoke to his mother. He drank a glass of OJ. Ironically, he drank a glass of himself. And Robert Shapiro arrives. OJ surrenders himself to authorities finally. And when the police searched the famous Ford Bronco, famous white Ford Bronco, they find $8,000 in cash, a change of clothing, a loaded .357 Magnum, his passport, family pictures, a disguise kit, fake goatees and mustaches, everything he would need to be on the run. So this points to the fact that OJ was running. He didn't want to get caught for anything, which in my book points to his guilt. Like Scott Peterson had all this stuff to disguise himself, and I think that pointed to his guilt. I don't think innocent people feel the need to go on the run from stuff. OJ was booked at the Parker Center and taken to the Men's Central Jail. Callings was booked on suspicion of harboring a fugitive and held on $250,000 bail. The Ford Bronco chase, the suicide note, and the items found in the Bronco never become a part of the trial. They are so famously associated with the trial, but Marsha Clark, who we'll discuss in detail, because she's the one that pretty much botched this entire case, and made it so he did not get convicted. She eventually admits that implied guilt, but defended her decision because people were reacting to the chase and suicide. Like I said, they were telling OJ to run and telling him not to kill himself and that we love him. So she was worried that the jury would relate to that. Now, Marcia Clark F's up this case in so many ways, so don't get defensive of her. She was handed this case on a silver platter and ruined it. That man should have been in jail long before he got put in jail for kidnapping and stealing his own memorabilia. So, even his friends say they interpreted the actions as an admission of guilt, but thousands of people were encouraging him to plead and were sympathetic to his feelings. So that brings us to the end of this part. Next part, we'll be getting into the preliminary hearing, the actual trial, where you will meet Johnny Cochran, who I brought up earlier, and see how the dream team works and how they literally are a dream team that makes miracles happen and the media coverage of it. So, please go rate the show, give it 5 stars, because you know your girl loves it. And keep liking, subscribing, sharing with friends, and stay stoned, my friends. I will see you for part 3. Thank you.